Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Tech Done Different. I'm your host, Ted Harrington, and with me here today is my friend, Brittany Cotton. She is a leadership and executive coach, primarily for CTOs, and she's the head of coaching at the group 7 CTOs, which is where we first met. Brittany, I'm so excited to have you on.
Happy to be here as well.
When I asked you if you would come on the show, and I had no topic in mind, I can't remember what it was that you said, but you joked around with me about something. I was like, this is exactly why I want this person on, because let's have some fun with it. And then it turns out we actually had a good topic, which is leadership, which is your specialty. So maybe we can start there. And for our audience, maybe we could just talk about how you became a leadership coach, because I think we're going to talk a lot about leadership principles, and how you got to know what you're talking about is interesting.
Yeah, I got here completely accidentally. So I had lived inside of the vast and very interesting world of academia, finished a master's program, applying to programs, when the applications really made me feel like a fraud and an imposter, like just waiting any day someone was going to knock on my door and say, your thesis was bullshit, like come back here and fix this, or how'd you get this far? And I realized that I'd spent a lot of time and money in a system that always was asking me to prove more. And I was really tired of proving. If you've ever kind of lived in that world, it's a lot of turning in papers, going to conferences in order to get more funding or to get a good spot in some sort of program. I learned about a leadership and coach training program. I thought coaching sounded like absolute bullshit, but I observed another friend go through the program and they completely transformed. And so I thought there's something here. And a month into the program, I started getting clients, and by year's end, quit all my jobs. I've been full-time coaching ever since. That was in 2016. And I've been a part of a organization that trains leadership alongside coaching, with the belief that every coach is a leader and that every leader should have coaching skills. So it's really been the bread and butter of every day that I've been living for the last 7 years. And I've found that the reason why I think leadership and coaching are so connected is that in order to be a good leader, you really have to have a high level of self-awareness in order to have a higher level of awareness of others to really provide high elevation, feedback, training, support, so on and so forth. So accidental, but I think I ended up in the right place.
Yeah, I would say so. I've been fortunate to be on the receiving end of your leadership coaching. And one thing that really struck me when we were doing all those different exercises was it was just remarkable how capable you were and how many of these principles you understood. And I remember thinking at the time, like, you know, there's people in this room who have been CTOs for 30 plus years and you're teaching them something new. And I thought, I remember in that moment thinking that was really remarkable. Not that like, I didn't think you'd be able to teach someone something new. That isn't the point, but more like, hasn't this person seen it all by this point? So that's obviously not true. I don't even know why I would have thought that, but the thought did cross my mind. And so maybe you could speak to that a little bit. How did you so quickly learn these principles where someone who's maybe been executing the principles you're teaching for decades, this is new information to them?
You know what? I actually think that it's because the methodology that I exist in is all about personal transformation first as access to training and supporting others. And if we can always learn something more about ourselves, you know, there's people who think, oh, you get coaching for a while and then you're done, you're good. look, that's great. I think people should do that. And I've been getting coached for 7 years, and every call I'm still learning something new about myself. And in learning that new thing, it shifts some sort of model or tool around leadership that I get to see it different or hear it different or experience it different. So like yourself, people in that room, while they may have heard something like it before or even experienced something like it before, by accessing a new part of themselves, it actually is new information. And to me, that's really the door that I try to go through with CTOs and people who are working on their leadership, is you got to start first with your experience or belief around something to really have it transform how you show up as a leader.
So how do people, I like the way you described earlier that you have to have self-awareness in order to be a good leader. How have you seen leaders do that successfully in terms of, is it like they're going to therapy? Is it, coaching obviously seems like part of it. Are there practices that people do that help with this?
I think coaching, therapy, making sure you have a really great feedback loop, whether or not your entire organization does or not, but as long as you have a peer or somebody that you work with that's really willing to give you feedback and reflect to you how you're showing up and what your impact is, can also be really powerful. I was just coaching a CTO right before this, and we were talking about how everyone's superpower in their leadership is also their Achilles heel. So I think one of the best ways a leader can really gain some self-awareness is getting really clear. What are some of my superpowers as a leader? And if that word freaks people out, like another way to think about it is everybody has a toolbox, and all of us use probably 25% of the tools in the toolbox. Leadership coaching is designed for you to have access to every single tool and get really good at knowing when to pull which one out. If at this time you're not getting coaching, you don't have access to funding for it, I would start there by looking at what tools do I always go to first, and which ones do I avoid or do I not choose, because that's the freeway exit I always get off at. So that to me is the start of awareness, is really starting to look at, oh, what had me operate that way in this meeting? What had me not say something when I really felt like I should? Oh, how often do I do that? And it's just starting to kind of like peel away from yourself and notice yourself more to start seeing some of the habits and patterns.
So is the idea, I like the way you framed it as your superpower also is your Achilles heel. Is this the idea that our strengths, like our weaknesses exist also in our strengths? That's the concept more or less that you're getting at?
Yeah. And said just even a little more directly, it's like, if you continually use one superpower over and over, it's not going to be the thing that's needed for that moment. So it actually suddenly, it becomes your weakness rather than the thing that works. So for example, like this person I was just coaching, they really operate from producing results. Well, sometimes that's actually not needed. Sometimes a messy conversation is needed where maybe people have to sit in the discomfort of not having a result. But if that's always the thing he's listening for, he's going to miss out on a meeting where maybe letting the team sit in the mess could actually be the thing that they needed. And that where it becomes the Achilles heel.
That's interesting. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So maybe correct me if I'm misunderstanding this. So it sounds like you're saying a leader who maybe is good at rallying people around a vision, you shouldn't always be doing that. There's moments when maybe you want to be sitting back and not being the one rallying. You want to be listening or encouraging others to step into the void.
Yeah, exactly. Like I like to think about it. We all have superpowers, but let's make sure they're not just from automatic, that it's not the thing that we're always doing, because maybe that situation doesn't call for that thing.
Right now, I'm going through the process of performing the reviews for my direct reports. And I always find that to be an interesting exercise, because in some senses, it's administrative, right? Because it's like, everything that's in there has already been communicated. And if, in fact, it hasn't been communicated, that is not the time to be communicating like what you got to work on or whatever. But one of the things I find is that when I have a direct report who is very, very capable in a certain area, and it's like they did a 10 out of 10 performance, and that happens a lot, I find myself not wanting to just be satisfied with that and say like, well, you have nothing to grow on. And so usually the default coaching that I wind up giving that type of person is identifying the things I saw them do well and say, just do more of this. Like, don't move away from these types of things. Is that an effective way to grow people, or is there different advice to give to a high performer?
Yes, to all of it. So yeah, it can be effective. I think if it's the only tool that you're using in those things, then you both miss out on a chance to see where they could grow. So the first place my brain went was, it could look like this. Hey, now that you've really got this, like in a place where it succeeds, you're great at it, now what do we get to focus on? Hey, what do we not get to work on by having so much attention here? amazing. You've really excelled in this. Where haven't you excelled that we can start looking at for the next 3 months?
I'm going to go implement that right away.
Good. Well done. Good listener.
That's the goal. So as we think about, so you're coaching me about coaching others. Is that in fact the way that you make impact at an exponential scale by, like, I have a philosophy that I'm like, I want to build leaders who build leaders. Is that what a coach is trying to do, or is a coach trying to do something different?
I think every coach has a different reason, and there's a lot of different kinds of coaches out there, which is kind of interesting. I think that people kind of put it all into one category, and they also often conflate it with mentoring, which is in my methodology very different, right? Mentor is somebody who's done it before, can give you direct opinion, feedback, advice because they've lived it. A coach is completely objective. They're listening at a really deep level to hear your thinking, speaking, behavioral patterns so that you can understand yourself at such a high level to understand how to create the experience or the result that you want. Sometimes people hire, you know, coaches because they want to grow and be better and grow other people. Yes. I really love coaching because I don't know, I think giving somebody access to a deeper part of themselves then is the domino for the next time they go into the office and they do that for somebody else. I'm a firm believer that we all just really want to be seen and heard. So I think that those are two of the biggest components of coaching skills. Are you really hearing people and not just what's being said, but also what's underneath the surface? And then, you know, giving them that in a very authentic, sometimes bold way so that they can work to something, you know, they've never worked on before.
I like the way you phrased that, that people want to be seen and heard. I already know that to be true for sure. But I also know that when people get frustrated with me from time to time, as that might not be surprising.
No,
yeah, I can be a frustrating person. And it does kind of usually stem from this. And I, you know, we'll get some sort of feedback, usually indirectly, that there's some sort of latent frustration about me in some way. And then as I go and try to fix it or like resolve whatever the problem is, I realize it's not the tangible, whatever the problem is. It's more like I didn't do a good enough job making this person feel heard. And they, as a result, they don't understand me and they don't understand my behaviors and they don't understand how it's like benefiting them. And so in the absence of that information, they assume that it's a negative thing. What's the counsel to dealing with something like that? Like, how do you, even when you think you're making people feel heard and it turns out you're not, how can you improve on that?
How you're making people feel heard. You think you are, but it turns out that you're not.
I definitely, this is a priority for me. I want people to feel, because I genuinely care about what they have to say, because that's how I improve as a leader. It's how we improve our organization. But, you know, running a company, you only have so much time. And what winds up happening is that periodically certain people you inadvertently didn't make feel heard enough. And that's when these issues seem to flare up. And I would like to resolve that.
Have you ever asked, hey, from this meeting or from this conversation, are you left feeling seen and heard?
No. Well, I don't think so. Maybe, but not intentionally. So that's a good question.
One of the things that I find that I think is the most simple thing all leaders could practice, but I would probably guess 75% of the population leaves it out. You know how Hansel, do you know the story of Hansel and Gretel? How they like to leave the crumbs so they can find their way back?
Yeah.
Is putting crumbs in a conversation so that everybody knows where they are and what's next. So what I mean by that is like, hey, my intention after this meeting is that you feel really seen and heard. And there might be a way that I missed it. At the end, I'm going to ask you, is that all right with you? And if there's more for you to say or more for me to hear, we're going to have some space for that. Does that sound good for you? Great. Or, hey, we're about to do a performance review. I might have to say some stuff that might be a little uncomfortable or that you may not have been prepared to hear. Is there any way that you need to hear it or that I need to say it? So it has you know that I trust you and believe you, but also allows me to be really frank.
Wow, I love that. That's super powerful. It's interesting hearing you describe it because, I mean, I have, even just today, as an example, I had a meeting with someone in our organization where my express intent was I just wanted to hear what this person had to say. I want them to feel seen and heard. And then, of course, whatever came out of that, obviously I wanted to be able to help take action on whatever, but I really wanted this person to feel seen and heard. And hearing you describe it, it's so simple. I never verbalized that. It was never like, I was like, oh, it's our little secret that, you know, I'm here to have you feel heard. And when I was hearing you describe that, the way that you just sort of walked through that, it neutralized, I think, any of the, I don't know why, maybe I thought that like saying to someone like, I'm going to sit with you so you feel heard. Like, I was like, am I being patronizing? But the way you described it isn't patronizing at all.
Yeah, to me, it's like, you know, when you go on a trip and let's say like you're a guide is driving you like 3 or 4 hours it's a really different experience if the guide is like, it's going to be 3 or 4 hours and we'll get there when we get there. Versus if someone says, hey, we're going to go past a pond and it's going to be a really big pond. You're going to see a lot of ducks. It's going to be great. And then we're going to start our like ascend up a really, really windy hill. If you start to feel nauseous, I promise you after the third turn, it's going to get a lot better. And then we're going to go vertical. It's going to get windy again. Then it's going to be real quick. It's going to stop. And then we'll be at the top of the hill. It's such a different experience, right? When you're in that car and you're starting to feel sick or uncomfortable, you're like, okay, I know when we hit that third curve, I'm going to be okay. Oh, I know after it's like the runway, it's going to get a lot better. The same is true of language and leadership. If you guide people inside of the conversation, it disarms them. It has them feel in relationship and partnership with you. And it's simply saying like, I care enough about what we're talking about to really put in this extra language so that you feel like you're with me and we're on the same trip.
Wow. I could visualize being on that trip right there. I saw the ducks.
Yeah. It's honestly, when I see leaders implement just this one thing of actually like speaking into the conversation, their expectation of the conversation, what their intention is, what they want to get out of it, what might come up in it, completely different for somebody.
Yeah, it's wild. It's funny too, because it's like, this doesn't, on one hand, doesn't sound like a groundbreaking principle. On the other hand, it absolutely does, right? The idea of just like, let's just say what we're trying to do here. And a lot of the anxiety goes away.
Yeah, it's even, and you can apply this everywhere, right? Like we've all been in a situation with a friend or a partner where you get so worked up and you want to have like a really serious conversation because something's bothering you. And immediately when they walk in the house, you're like, how could you do this? Da, 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 da. Like, this was so frustrating. Versus being like, hey, I'm really frustrated and I want to have a conversation that might get messy. Are you actually open to having that conversation right now? Like giving somebody the option to choose, yes, I'm open to that, completely changes how that conversation could go. Versus trying to get someone into that conversation when maybe they don't want it right now. Maybe they haven't been thinking about all that the stuff that day. So it's these really simple things that if you just put the crumb in the conversation, like Hansel and Gretel, you will get there together or find your way back to what the intention is.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, I'm thinking about, there's at least one difficult conversation I've been putting off for a while because I just been afraid of having that particular difficult conversation. But it's also like, I don't want to bring it up at the moment when the other person in this conversation won't be in the right frame of mind to have it. And that tool you just gave me will assure that almost certain, I would imagine that even if that person's not in the right frame of mind and, you know, they're pissed off from something else during the day, they'll be like, I can see this is important and I'm going to change my mind to be receptive to what's about to happen.
Right. And if we go back to being seen and heard, that's what you're basically doing when you ask someone if they're willing to have that conversation right now. It actually says to their brain, oh, I get to pick and let me check in with myself to see if right now is a good time or not.
I love it. Can we just talk about this stuff all day, every day until I'm good
I
at
do.
This?
It's really fun. Yeah. Well, just to point to the other part of your question about being seen and heard is, I would give yourself some grace because oftentimes we think we know what we need to be seen and heard. And it's only later that we realize we needed something different, right? So let's say I'm really mad at you by the way that you handled a project. I could think, I just need you to hear that I'm really mad. But maybe after saying that a week or two later, I realized I actually needed you to apologize. So giving yourself and others giving their leaders grace that sometimes we actually also don't know what we need to be seen and heard. And it might take some time to realize what that is. So I really believe in cultures that you can go out and come back in again, where like you can have a conversation, be what it was. And a week later, come back and be like, hey, there's just one other thing that I didn't get to say. I want to come back to this because it would make me, you know, get my needs met or so on and so forth.
That totally makes sense, right? That as you further process something and you've thought about it further and maybe there was that 5% of the issue is still remaining and you gotta sort that out. So you see that as an indicator of a healthy culture of whether someone can come back to something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the leader makes it healthy or not healthy based on how they react to that ability to come back.
Yeah. Like let's use your example of somebody coming to you thinking you gave them what they needed to be seen and heard. And then let's say a few weeks they come back to you and they're like, you know, Ted, like I actually needed you to say this and I didn't hear it from you. And I didn't feel, and you being like, I totally understand. I get it. Like how could I provide that now? right? It's like your reaction to them going out and coming back in again says a lot. And it would give people the safety to know that they can do that. The opposite is true, or not the opposite, but it's also true in situations where I hear so many leaders being like, oh, well, this is what I thought was the best plan. And I've now realized it's this, but I've already started to execute it on this. So we have to go with this. Like, it's so natural that we're going to realize something different. But I think the biggest thing that I see in leadership is it exists in this absolutely ridiculous paradox that like other rules of like humanity don't exist. You have to be perfect. You can't be scared. You have to get it right the first time. You can't be weak and vulnerable. And I actually think that the best leaders in the world break up all of those things and shake them up, which to my point I was making a second ago can look like, hey, a week ago, I thought that this was going to be the best case scenario for us. I'm having second thoughts. Can we talk about this as a group?
I love that. What you just described, you alluded to a question that's sort of been bubbling in the back of my mind throughout our discussion is, I'm curious to your view as to whether or not there are universal principles about leadership. I mean, there's endless books about leadership, right? And if you read, you know, a lot of them, you'd probably wind up having at least 50% overlap between all the major leadership books. And that raises the question, which is, well, maybe there's some things that are universal and some things that aren't, but you are a professional in this, you study this every day. I'm curious to your take on that question.
Like what some of them might be?
Well, I guess there's two parts of the question. First is, are there universal truths that like all leaders should adhere to? And then the second is, if yes, what are some of them?
Yeah, I think so. And not should because, or else you suck and you're a terrible leader, but I think should from the sense of leadership is polarizing and it allows us to create a lot of influence and impact. And if we're willing to lean into the high level power that leadership is, I do think that there are some traits and things that we ought to practice to really serve ourselves and serve our organization or cause or whatever it is that we're serving. A few of those are really leaning into fear. I really believe that if you are a leader and you are not challenged or afraid of something, that you're not playing a big enough game. The story that leaders need to not be afraid and need to have it all figured out, I think is absolute crap. And I actually think that if you feel that way, then likely there's a whole level of your leadership that you're not clued into. That's would be a like Narnia type situation where if you open that door, boy, you're going to find like a whole other world. So leaning into fear and being present to it. And if it's not present, like where are you not challenging yourself? The other is, you know, I've said this to you before, that leadership is an inside job. So really looking at yourself as the first place that needs to be transformed or learned about in order to really serve others. So whether, like we said at the beginning, right, coach, therapist, whatever way you can, but recognizing that you are the clearing for your company or your team. And so what you are unwilling to take on, they will be unwilling to take on. So your willingness to be responsible for yourself, I think, is a key trait in leadership.
Yeah, I love both of those. And it's interesting hearing you talk about fear. I was sort of thinking about that as you were describing that. And I don't know if this is normal or not, but I definitely had both feelings at the same time where I was like, oh, I definitely have faced fear and feel it every moment of every day about things that, like, you know, when you're responsible for so many people at a company, there's fear that like, well, what if we make the wrong move, the wrong investment? We pursue the wrong strategy, the wrong market. We let a customer, you know, slip through our fingers and all of a sudden we have to like let people go or worse, you know? And I live with that like every day for sure. And then I was starting to think about like, how does that manifest? How does that fuel different activities in a positive way? So how have you seen leaders use that fear in a productive way rather than just like stomach ulcers?
Yeah. Well, I think the first part is like normalizing that fear is supposed to be present and it's not supposed to be eradicated. So can you be in a boardroom or be on a team and be like, okay, we all have fear and we have to learn how to be with it. Cause yeah, this is scary. We got people's livelihoods. We have all this money invested, so on and so forth. So the first thing I would say is do not try to eradicate it and learn to be with it. You know, everyone's gonna be different in what that looks like. Some people will want to meditate. Some people have to go on walks. Some people really need music, right? Actually learning the things that you need in order to be with fear, not make it go away, learn to be with it. The other aspect of that is then having relationships around it. Like, hey, this is scary. hey, yeah, we are up to something really big here. So as a team, how are we going to learn to operate with each other when there's fear in the space? That's often where teams erode or relationships get mired in something, some sort of dysfunction or toxicity. Instead, whether you do this the first time fear arrives or you do it at the very beginning, hey, at some point, we're all going to be scared. Who are we going to be together when the fear shows up? I think is really important.
Can the, I'll use the word followers. That's probably not the right word, but I'm trying to draw differentiation from the leader. So can the followers or whatever we would call that category of person truly share the same fear as the leader shares? Because leadership itself entails a type of fear that is shielding from everyone else.
It kind of occurs like a trick question. Like I get what you're saying, that the fear, the things that they might be afraid of are different, but you're saying, can they share in the difference of the fears or just simply share that they both have fears?
Well, I'm sure they both have fears, but can they share the same fear? So like we just talked a moment ago about the existential fear that any entrepreneur has all the time. And can someone who works for that person share in the existential fear? And should they share in the, like, I look at people who, you know, report in from like the entry level all the way up to the senior level of our organization. And I hope that they don't have existential fear. But at the top of an organization, you hope they do have existential fear because that drives conservative decision making, et cetera.
It's a great question. I think that there's absolutely a line that sometimes needs to be placed in terms of transparency, right? In terms of really like creating a culture that feels safe and taken care of. And if every leader of every organization is telling you everything that they're afraid of and sharing in that, right, that's going to change the water that the company is swimming in. But I also really do believe in transparency and being seen in our humanity. And I think that most leaders are afraid to go to that level of humanity. But what I know about that level of humanity is that it has people be super committed, super trusting, more in partnership, more in relationship. And all of these things are what does create a great culture and a great company. So I think it's intuition-based, you know, trial and error-based. But yeah, I do think it's that leaders and their direct reports can share in the fear, and it's who you're going to be about it with them.
I love it. What a good note for us to wrap up on as our time is coming to a close here. Before we part, is there any final thing you want to leave our audience with? If you want to summarize or introduce a new idea, what should we end on?
Yeah, the last leadership trait that I'm going to say that I think I see people missing out on the most is enrollment. Really speaking to and creating so much possibility in your words and in your vision that people are moved to action or moved to say yes. Most leaders that we see in the world and on TV don't actually have this skill. They typically rely on persuasion or fear or convincing. So if you are currently a leader right now in the world, I think one of the best things you can do is learn some enrollment skills, learning how to really, really get people so connected to a vision or project that, again, that they are moved to action or they are moved to say yes. When a leader has that skill, it's completely changed the organization. It changes how people show up to their team, how they're willing to work, so on and so forth. So that would probably be the biggest thing I would point people in the direction of, other than go out, get your coaching, go out and look at yourself as the one who needs to work on yourself. But then the skill of enrollment, really creating so much possibility for somebody that they want to get into action.
I want to act on that right now. So you just enrolled me.
Great. There we go.
Well, thank you so much for all the time and wisdom. I think I'll be a better leader as a result of our chat today. Appreciate you.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here.
For everyone listening, if you want to learn more about the show or Brittany, just head over to tedharrington.com/podcast and we'll catch you next time.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPMagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.